You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Marsha Milgram Dodge, Freddie Walker Brown, Katie Huffman, Donna McKechnie. Here's to the ladies who lunch. Thank
here
you so much for being
Cheers,
here to the
Cheers.
Podcast of the ladies who lunch.
Fantastic.
You know, we may be the opposite of what Stephen Sondheim had in mind when he wrote that song, because we don't lunch. Right.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm busy.
Mean?
I'm busy working or rehearsing, or I'm going to class or the physical therapist. Anyway, so
yes,
thank
I guess
you.
It is about those women who
yeah.
don't have much else to do but spa.
Well,
days.
I mean, that's what he wrote about, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
I
love that because this.
Yeah.
First of all, here we are in Sardi's restaurant. It started in 1927. It was established here. And I was here when it opened.
No. Stop.
And,
but
it has such, I don't know, significance to me. Because, you know, when you first come to New York, and I want to talk about how we all did that, had that moment in New York where you go, I'm in New York. Mm, this
no.
place was, you know, just all the opening nights. And this table is a very famous table. This belonged to Vincent Sardi, and I remember him standing at the at the door every night.
Yeah, I never
he
met
loved,
him.
Oh, he's a wonderful man. And this is fantastic.
Yeah, no, part of theater history, that is a beautiful thing to be able to say that we are.
Yeah.
I know, isn't
yeah.
that nice?
Yeah, no,
and
we
are.
Crazy.
And we're
really
I'm sitting
kind.
Next
I'm
to Donna McKechnie.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Tapestry.
No, but okay, so let me just start by connecting each other with, you know, okay. for everyone knows, kind of another introduction. Marsha, I've been a big fan. I'm just a fan of everybody. But we did, just recently, me and Andrea McCardle put a show together, yeah. and we asked you to direct it, and you said yes, and it was just amazing.
It was
so beautiful.
I had to pinch myself when I came home every night a little bit.
You're a Michigan girl.
Michigan girl.
And you've been directing and choreographing like for
40 years.
40.
I'm going to say it. I joined SDC, which then was SSDC, which is the Stage Directors and Choreographers Society, in 1979, because I walked in and said, I want to be a member of this union that Bob Fosse founded.
Sweet. Oh, fabulous.
And at that time, they said, here, just pay $150
yeah.
and you're in.
Right?
You know,
should have done it then.
And, oh,
yeah.
I remember joining those unions
yeah.
back
yeah.
then.
So, and when I saw Ragtime, your production on Broadway, I was so moved. And that's why I thought of you, you know. So, yeah.
Oh, Alton did the original, but I do know
she
Alton.
Did the revival.
Yeah, I
it was brilliant.
Thank you.
Okay, and Freddie and I go back to, you know, when I haven't seen you in so long, but I always say we did Love, Loss, and What I Wore at the West Side Theater, like
nice.
A couple years ago. It was like, what,
it felt
10?
Like, I think it's been, it may easily have been 10, I think.
Wow.
Yes, it's 2019.
So
yes.
everything is like
yes,
a couple
sure, yes.
years ago, you know?
Yeah. It feels that way.
But it was Love, Loss, and What I Wore by Nora Ephron, and you were so brilliant in it, the monologue with the Kelly bag. Do you know that
mm-hmm.
monologue still? You have to come on and do that monologue.
Okay, yeah, I don't know if I know it off the top of my head, although I loved
but
it.
But you were like, you were so good in the show. And, I mean, of course, Rent, the Pulitzer Prize winning
Yay,
Rent,
Jonathan.
You played the original Joanne.
Yes.
And Lion King, so many things. And when I met you and I got to know you in those little tiny dressing room, that one dressing room, you're like a Renaissance woman to me because you she's a singer, composer, actor, producer, writer. We're going to find out about your foodie thing, and a rapper. And what am I missing?
That's enough.
Teacher.
I do teach, though.
Teacher.
Yes, I do
yeah,
teach.
Yeah, great. It's great.
Do we all teach now?
Katie. Well, first of all, you are just, you know Katie. I mean, a dynamic, brilliant three, you know, you do everything. You're a triple threat. You came to New York in 85? I'd already left. Big deal. Brought you, or did you?
I was a teenage drag queen.
Wow.
Yes. And then all the shows you've done, which we could, you know, it's
well,
like
I was a drag queen pretty much every one
right.
of them. But
professional lesbian, that's your
six. Right, exactly. Right. I'm not a lesbian, but I am tall. So in show business, I play a lot.
I went
of
to school with someone that was in the original Akash, Ken. He was very light skinned. He was one of the Kajals. What's his name? Oh, gosh.
Ken. Okay. In the original, original company?
Original company. Died in
Someone will
Europe,
send me a message
like
and find
on
out
on a train track.
Ken's
something weird.
Ooh, oh, no.
Sorry. I digress.
Oh, so let me just say
I'm always playing 6 degrees of separation. I'm like
yeah,
always
exactly.
trying to figure out how we connected to.
I'm here to take your order.
Hi.
Oh, hi.
Well, go ahead.
I was the last one, so I haven't really
Katie,
looked.
Go ahead.
I'll have the chop salad.
Chop salad?
No tomatoes, though.
No tomatoes.
I'm allergic to tomatoes, so
no
do not
problem.
Let them touch my plate,
okay.
please. Thanks.
Okay.
And I'm going to have the crab cake.
The crab cake.
Yeah, appetizer, and that's fine.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I will have the Caesar with the blackened shrimp.
Chicken.
Mm-hmm. Shrimp.
Shrimp.
Yes.
Thank you.
And I'll do the... Shrimp sardi appetizer?
Sure. Thank you very
Great.
Much, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so connecting the dots again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Lakaj.
We decided that we first worked together in 2000. That is a few
in
years
Philadelphia,
ago.
Is that what you're thinking?
It was Eric Stern directed the Long Island Symphony for New Year's Eve. Remember that? And we came back in a long black limousine.
No,
and we
it wasn't
had a meatball.
Was,
what was it?
It was
we had a meatball sandwich.
It was
that
Neil.
Was as long as the
it
car.
Was Neil Berg.
Oh,
it was Neil Berg's. It was at. It was in Philadelphia. It was one of his 100 years of Broadway
City, right?
or something. But we did have a nice size band that time, which was unusual.
Oh, wow.
Best part.
Okay.
And we
all
did.
Right.
We stopped
Limo,
off to get a.
General Limo was like.
Okay. So, all right.
That's
good.
Crazy.
A cheesesteak, though. We
oh,
had
good.
A cheesesteak moment.
So
oh, a cheesesteak, not a meatball.
That's even better. That's even better.
So
while
like,
you're Philly.
It sounds so fancy. I
in
played
Philly, you have to have a cheesesteak sandwich.
Yeah, we
that's
over.
Right. That
we
makes sense
over the
now.
Limo
okay,
and got a cheesesteak.
There's
love
logic
it.
There.
Love it.
Okay, so the other thing is, like, recently, this is brings me right into the subject of, oh, show business.
Yeah.
The ups and downs of show business. Because we last worked together in a rehearsal room because we were rehearsing a concert that we love. I mean, it was going to be
great. It was great.
Great.
It was
me and you and Judy K.
Oh, sweet.
Judy
K.
Judy Q.
Judy
K.
And I wish I could tell the Judy K. story, but that's another day because she...
She'll have to come in.
Yeah, she'll have to come
she's
in.
Just
but we were... It was great. It was great, the three of us, and we opened with the
show. It was Our Guy Cy, wasn't it Our Guy
yes,
Cy?
Yes, yes, yes.
So we've all, we all starred for Cy Coleman on Broadway.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So we were doing...
A
telling our stories through that, like a three...
That black,
and then we had a couple of
yeah, we did our own thing, and then did old black magic. Anyway, so we get down to the day we're leaving, and it's canceled.
Yeah.
Oh no!
Getting down to the day we were leaving.
Yeah,
and like,
where was it supposed to play?
I don't know.
They shouldn't say.
No,
right?
Shouldn't say.
Oh,
but
okay.
I mean, somebody lost their
Google
nerve or whatever.
Yes.
I don't know.
I'll be like at home.
I
after.
Mean, somebody lost their shirt because your manager was saying, "Hey, how are ticket sales going?" And they were not saying anything.
Oh.
They were saying it's fine. And then, like, well, we just haven't sold enough tickets. And we were all like, you haven't sent us anything, like, to promote it.
That's
to, you know,
too bad.
Yeah, it was really too bad.
They're newbies.
Because it was good.
So.
It was good.
Anyway, so this is perfect.
But it got you guys in a room together to play,
well,
which was.
I mean, it because this is something that I've been thinking about for a long time, just because I have the most fun. I mean, I love being on stage and I love performing. I love making a living that way. But I also, the most fun I've had is shared experiences with women friends in show business. And because the contours of everyone's career is very different, you know, it goes up and down and in our lives as well. But there are things that are fundamentally the same.
Mm-hmm.
And it's too hard, this business. You have to love what you do. I mean, what is the point? It's too hard.
Yeah.
And if you're in longer than 5 years, you have a chance to make a decision about, I got to get out now, I want to have a family.
Mm-hmm.
So what's interesting to me is to go back. I mean, I always had an affinity for music. I always saw myself dancing on a stage when I was at Tyke. I mean, part of that story was put into a chorus line,
right,
and that's through the character of Maggie. But I used to see myself dancing on a stage. I mean, I never saw, like, you know, playing house. I never had baby dolls. I had a teenage doll. She was a full-grown doll.
When you were six.
But my sister and brother didn't make life decisions like that or until they were in college and after college. And they love what they do. I'm very proud of them. They're very good at what they do. But they took their time, got their education. But I always... Now, so I'm throwing this to you around the table. What was that epiphany or a cumulative thing that happened? Or what pointed you, what started you?
Oh, gosh, me first?
Yeah. Or, well, you don't have to.
Before you start, I want to say one
thing. Yeah, you go.
No, I'll let you go.
Yeah,
I want you to go first.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I want you to go first, but I just want to say one thing. Part of what you're talking about is the fact that what we do is both a vocation and a profession. And that's one of the things that makes it so incredibly difficult to balance. All right, now go. What got
you started? Yeah, I was going to say, I started dancing, you know, Julie Adler School of the Dance when I was three. And I was Mike in a chorus line. I was watching my sister's class and I would come home and do the steps. Mm. And my mother went, oh, the wrong kid's in dance class. Mm-hmm. Of course, my sister then ended up in therapy, so that's how that goes. But I
as a therapist?
No, as in therapy.
You avoided therapy?
You know what? I somehow have avoided therapy. So, but I just love dancing. And then I would watch, you know, Shirley Temple on the weekends on the Sunday morning movies and Fred and Ginger and Gene Kelly. And I just I wanted to be them. All those MGM musicals. And I got to college and auditioned for a show, and that was it. I never went home for another Jewish holiday. I was, you know, where are you? I'm in rehearsal. Like
the commitment was there, yeah.
Yeah, I just love, I'm a rehearsal creature. Yeah, I love being in the rehearsal room. You know, opening night, nothing more useless than a director, right? That's the saddest day of my process is opening night because I have to wean. Yeah, I have to let go. But, you know, I got to University of Michigan, and I just started choreographing everything I could get my hands on.
Great school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before musical theater.
Yeah. Like, like Jack O'Brien went to Michigan.
Yeah, he was a little before me, and then...
A lot.
And their musical theater program didn't start too well after I left.
Mm-hmm.
I graduated in 77, got in a car with my then boyfriend, Gentile boyfriend, so that's a whole nother thing. And we drove to New York, and I never looked back. And then I would look at backstage and see choreographer TBD, and I would submit my resume. And that's how I started. I didn't have any MFA, BFA. I didn't have any. I just started. I wanted to choreograph. I choreographed in college. I couldn't go to YouTube or anywhere. I just had to, like, see a movie and go, oh, what did Fosse do in that?
Once
a year day. I'll do something like that. So I didn't know what I was doing half the time except borrowing until I realized, oh, that's intellectual property. Don't do that. Make up your own stuff.
Isn't that an interesting thing now? Because I definitely work with a lot of younger people, you know, coaching and teaching and all that. And they do watch those things like crazy to the point of imitating them as opposed to being inspired by them.
That's the difference.
And that's the difference because we watched it and our memory of it was how it fed into our own bodies.
Right. And I could never, everything had to be.
In a way that you go through the imitation phase and then you begin to find your own voice.
But now they tend to think that, oh, that must be the right way to do something.
They tend to auto-tune now. So
right?
It's a whole,
but it's really different.
Yeah. That's why
as opposed to being inspired.
That's why they need people like you to do it.
But in college, I went with my sister to New York and saw a chorus line. And I got your autograph, and I got Tommy Walsh's autograph. I'm glad I gave it to you. I waited backstage for a long time till every single person came out of there, and I got everyone's autograph. And it was way before, you know, we have these, you know, barriers now.
We could just see
and
them.
Then I think I saw the show. And then when I came to New York, I just was like, I want to do that. And then I'm just going to jump cut really quick, but then turn it over. Cut to April 28th, the closing night of Chorus Line. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what year that was, 90...
92?
Mm,
yeah. 91. Wow. 91, I think.
And I walk in Schubert Alley, and I have a poster from Closer Than Ever, which I was doing off-Broadway. I had just worked with Don Pippin at New York State Theater.
Sweet.
And he introduced me to Bjork Lee, and we went in, and I sat in the balcony. It was the first time I saw it from upstairs.
Wow.
With all of the amazing Theron Musser lighting cues.
Yes.
And I don't know how many times the orchestra played that chord.
Mm. Kunk, yeah. Kunk, kunk, kunk.
At the end, right. Kunk.
I think I counted like 60.
Yeah.
Wow. I was just like
vibrating. Because that was with all the different...
So I felt, yeah, yeah, I just felt
no,
like
no, 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 this was the closing.
Yeah, I know, but
yeah,
didn't
the
they bring back
she
a bunch
was
of
there.
People?
Well, that was 83.
Okay,
that was 83.
And I was there because
yeah.
I was ushering
that
it.
Was,
oh, my God.
I was there. I actually have a program from it. I was ushering it. I ushered Broadway for 3 or 4 years, which was one of my favorite jobs ever.
So let me
go. But it was my birthday. That was
the other. Oh, my gosh.
So it was like one of those
serendipity crazy
conflagration
and they,
of
and the chord kept
feeling
happening
like I
because
belonged
the people
in this
didn't
community,
want it
you know
yeah. the people didn't want it to end. The applause kept going, and I remember I was there, and it was like I remember feeling the applause, people were screaming, and I it hit me as they oh my God, I'm gonna get emotional. The dancers as the light faded and the dancers' legs I was it's a bittersweet moment, but at the same time it hit me doubly hard because I went, that's the last time Michael's choreography will be on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And that just made it so mm-hmm. so now when I see people recreating the show using Michael Bennett's choreography, you know, it's like thank you. You know, it goes on. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway.
Well that's a show that is not on my bucket list because I actually don't know how to do it different.
Yeah.
Right?
You know what I mean? And I would never do Michael's.
We've all seen the film.
Yeah. Well,
it didn't work.
It didn't work.
Yeah, no.
All right.
Anyway.
So let's,
I'm loving this.
I want to make sure we all.
Yeah.
I love what you guys, you know, have
Where did you grow up?
St. Louis, Missouri.
Oh, I love St. Louis. Ted Drews. Do you like Ted Drews?
It's
not about frozen custard.
There's
okay.
No, it's not.
So where did you get the epiphany? Did you have an epiphany?
Oh, did I have an epiphany? The first epiphany was the fact that I did not belong in St. Louis. God love the SEL. But
how old were you when you started feeling that way?
About 3 or 4.
Oh.
Certainly by the time I got to school, I was always the weird one.
Big family?
Artsy one. Not really. I come from a Huxtable kind of family, you uh-huh. know, very assimilated, high-achieving African-Americans. Uncle was one of the world's greatest botanists. He just passed. I have a cousin who's a senator. Everybody's lawyers and, you know, that.
Wow.
So, you know, me wanting to be an actor was,
yeah.
what?
No one, no.
Of course, now it's, you know, our niece, the Broadway star, but, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I don't want to disparage. St. Louis is a beautiful place, but it's definitely a different place when you're not white. And so, I just, and then you're an artist too. And so you're just different, right? Yeah. So I always knew I was like,
how did
I
you know that you were in, how did, that's what I love.
I don't know.
When you were 3 and 4, you did.
Yes, because when I was 3 and 4, I was already writing stories and seeing things three-dimensionally and, you know, and just weirding out. And, and seeing things in weird ways. I started ballet at 4. I loved the concept of performing. I love the whole, and my family, you know, God love them. They were very literary, so you had to be literate. And you would have to actually do poetry recitations and whatnot at holidays and stuff for the family. That was something we did. And so all connected to Black history. So, you know, you learn like Paul Ernst Dunbar and have to get up and do recitations for Thanksgiving and stuff like that. So I just realized early on that it was part of me. And it comes, honestly, my mother and father met doing a play. So by 8 years old, because everybody's in education pretty much or some version, there was a lot of moving around the country in the summers. And you had to do your farm work. You had to go do work on somebody's farm. And then you did camp so that the parents could actually have some time. And then, you know, road trip. And so we would all road trip.
Wow.
And one of those, no, it was awesome.
That's a family.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. Yeah. And we're all over the country, so we would, you know, see each other. It was awesome. That's why I love touring. I mean, I was built for this, right? So I've been touring basically all my life. So the first big road trip at 8 is the one I remember to Detroit and then to Canada and then down through Niagara Falls and then a stop through New York City. And
that's when you planned your escape?
That's what I knew. That's exactly when I knew it. I was in Manhattan. We were in Times Square right over here.
What did you think?
I thought, here's where all the weirdos go. Here's where I will. I have a place to go.
Wow.
I can come here and be me. I know it. And so from that moment forth, everything was cool. Because I was like, yeah, whatever, high school, middle school, whatever. Because I'm out.
Because I'm out.
You know what I'm saying? Now, theater happened. I'm basically Glee is my life. And so, like, you know, I was Mercedes slash, what's her face? I'm sorry, Leah, I can't remember your character's name. Oh. Rachel. Mercedes slash Rachel. But now I'm Mr. Shu kind of thing. So it was high school. When I got to high school and that very first year and theater and the musicals and the, you know, the whole and the best teachers on the planet. I wish that teacher Tony had been around then, because dear God, Georgia Schofel deserves it. That woman deserves it. NYU was just getting me to New York. That's all that really was. She taught me everything I needed to know. When I found out TYA was something you could get paid for, we did that in high school. She had a touring company where we wrote and mounted show and took it to grade schools. In high school, you had to be a junior.
In St. Louis?
In St. Louis. That diva was it. You hear me? And when I came here, I was like, I can get paid for this and get Equity Weeks? Yeah.
Equity Weeks?
Yeah, TYA.
So did you do theater work?
Theater for young audiences. You know TYA?
Oh, yeah. TYA. Yeah, yeah. Theater for young audiences.
Yeah, we didn't do much TYA.
No, I did Where's Waldo with Daphne? Teenagers. Where's Waldo with Daphne 6 months before that happened?
Wow. Got your equity card there.
No. No, that's a different story. And a really crazy story.
Okay.
So.
Well, it's so fun to hear everybody, because, like, oh, there's elements of my story. And I know your stories, right? I mean, you and I both started really working when we were teenagers, right?
Well, didn't you? Yes, but you,
you really ran away from home.
I really did. I did that thing.
That was awesome.
But that was, yeah. And I had that. That's why I know about Escape, because I had to get out of Detroit area. The Detroit, not Detroit.
Yeah, it's a good place to be from.
But it almost didn't matter where I was, what city it was, because I felt very different and alienated in a way. And anyway, but now you from
I grew up,
the West Coast.
Born and raised in Santa Barbara, California.
And you talk about
And I got to tell you, paradise is a bore.
That's hilarious, because I was just going to say,
why would you ever leave? Oh, good Lord, get me out of here.
Wow.
But very young as well. You know, basically my mother says I came out sort of quietly with sophistication, said, hello, mother, you know, and did a pirouette, you know,
that was it.
Sort of, you know,
then you went through your tomboy stage, or did you
always
make that?
I was always a tomboy.
With your
I still am. I'm much more butch than my brothers. If you met my brothers, you'd laugh. I mean, one of them has mani pedis and long feathered hair. I mean, you know,
necessarily.
The other one won most beautiful senorita in fifth grade during Fiesta days. So, like, you know, please, gender in my family, like me.
Very fluid.
So, you know, it's like, eh, maybe she's a girl.
So, but, yeah. Did you start dance class, or did you have a little dance school like Julie Adler School in Detroit?
School of the Dance.
I love the dance.
I know, I love
Mine was the Goleta school of Ballet.
Yes, I've heard of her.
Well, Goleta, no, it's not a person. It's a city.
It's a city.
I thought it was a Russian dancer.
It's a city, No, but I grew up in this crazy moment in the history of Santa Barbara where we had extremely high-level training. Uh-huh. So, and my mother is from New York. She studied the School of American Ballet, and she played Juliet when she was 14. And, you know, which I didn't know growing up. I didn't know any of this. So she had stopped. She got married. I mean, it's like the crazy 1960, tired of being a virgin, get married, have babies, because she's an Italian from Westchester.
But she didn't talk about her career. It was like...
No, not at all. Not till much, much later, because the Italians were like, no, we got to this country to become white Americans.
And what you professionals, told you, you know. Doctors and lawyers. Yeah, I mean, you know, they're supposed to
I mean, they owned gas stations, but they made really good livings in being hard workers, right? So the arts was not... huge.
No, it was not something you did.
No, not something that
it was
she
something
was
you did to be well-rounded.
To do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right. But it's not a profession.
No, that was not even in their lexicon. No. Like I, you know, my cousins just came to my show on Wednesday, and you know, they're funny. They, you know, they're very sophisticated because they do see a lot of shows, but they have still no idea what I do. Yeah. You know, still no
That's
idea.
That's kind
but
of
they
the way my family
me.
Is. Wow. They love me, but they don't quite understand it. Did you?
My mom danced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At Julie Adler School of the Dance. She was in the adult classes. She did Man with the Golden Arm. I'll never, I have a great picture of her like a gold sleeve doing one of these.
So she gets it.
She gets it, the dancing part of it. The directing, it was always a little trickier. Wasn't sure what I did.
Yeah.
Understood like the making up the steps. But they turned me on to theater. And so the day I said, I'm going to do this for real, they were like, what? You can't do this for real. This is just to make you, you know, cultured.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was like, exactly. No. I'm going to go do this.
Like, what?
So that's when I had to
Well,
you could open a dance studio here in Detroit. I was like, no. I don't want to teach. I don't.
Yeah, it's a hard concept. To leave your home, your family. Invent. They can't.
Yeah. Oh, I couldn't wait. Just couldn't wait. Yeah. Could not wait.
No, me neither.
To leave.
Wait. There was like.
And you never looked back either, right?
No, but I had. I mean, really. I had crazy training. I mean, I went to school with Eric Stoltz and Anthony Edwards and all these people who really became, you know, very well known in this business. And to this day, I mean, I could give you a list of Santa Barbarans who are rock stars and jazz musicians and, you know, just really, really. But when I was a kid is when we all came up and my ballet teachers, and my mother wouldn't let me just take ballet because I was begging her from like 2 or 3 years old. Like, I have to take ballet.
Wow.
I have to. There's pictures of me, you know, I'm just 3 years old and like this. And my brothers are fighting in the background. Mm-hmm. You know,
did she ever tell you later when you became an adult why?
Who?
Your mom, like why she was...
Yeah. No, she told me then.
Then.
She said they're not good enough. Since you're not good enough. It's not good enough. Those teachers are not good enough. She waited to find these Goleta School of Ballet teachers.
Gotcha.
Mr. and Mrs. Hanlon, Bob and Carol. Bob had danced with New York City Ballet. Carol had danced with American Ballet Theater.
Oh my goodness.
So I went into...
So you got yin yang. You got it all.
And went into professional training immediately at 7. So at 7, it was my 7th birthday present.
Oh,
was
cool.
To start ballet class. And those people changed my life. I had a workshop at 6 as an actor. I started doing ballet when I was 7 with these extremely high-level professional people. And then at 9... There was a voice teacher, an operatic voice teacher in my hometown who had been literally the first woman traveled in Pittsburgh, I believe, via vacuum tube. Her voice was like the first voice to go. Like, she'd been around forever, a very famous soprano of her time. And she said, I want to teach Katie how to sing.
Cool.
So I had this. And then at home, like you, we would sit around and read Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. Like, that was what we did. Mm-hmm. You know, we sang and we read Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a lot of things, you know, but I definitely got all that too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, believe me, ballet was also at the ballet.
Yeah.
I only wanted to be there.
That's
where I needed to be. And at one point, I couldn't afford lessons. And those two people were like, well, it's not a choice. Katie has to be in class.
Yes.
So
yes,
I cleaned the studios
and
the bathrooms.
They really
that's
saw
how
that.
I
My mother made. Up till 2 a.m. making the tool, the costumes, so that I could have lessons. And I just didn't even know it.
Ah.
Do you know? Mm-hmm. And nobody wanted me to be in ballet class because it was my Scottish grandparent, you know, too frivolous.
Yes.
Why is she doing this? And it was anything that looked you were having fun was a sin.
That's funny, because my little
pleasure
Italian grandmother,
not
4'11", Didi. Maria Antonia Capicella, you know, was her maiden name. She drove me to ballet class. I mean, because I was the baby. I have two older brothers.
Yeah.
So we watched General Hospital, Truth or Consequences, you know, and then got into her Fiat and went to ballet school.
Oh, my gosh.
So we're covering, you know, it's so wonderful to see what I mean about how we have so much, like, connecting. You're covering stuff that I wanted to make sure that we covered, which is when you first come to New York, you know, and you have that experience and you go, I want to be here. It's not easy. Now, I was a teenager, so I was terrified. I was always in survival mode.
Mm.
But when you're that young, you kind of, you're omnipotent. You go, oh, nothing can find, you know.
Mm.
I think back and I go, I was in certain situations that could have been
very
really
desperate.
Dicey, you know.
Yeah. Sure.
Oh, I was in a dicey situation.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't
look at
stop
this.
There. Yeah, I know. Mm. So I guess what you're covering sort of like when you first got here, who were the people or who was a person or like your teachers? They really made the difference in your life, the mentorship or who helped you? Who gave you when you're alone and scared in the city? Did you, you know, find friends? Did you who are the people that
Baskin Robbins was a very good friend of mine.
Love them.
Both of them.
Worked with them.
But I came with my boyfriend, who's now my husband.
So you had a support. You had a support.
The Gentile.
Yeah. The Gentile. We got
my
married.
My boyfriend. Oh, wow. I was a Jew.
Oh, well, there you go.
First orgasm was with
the Jew.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I didn't go for the Jewish boys. No. I just didn't. They had Jewish mothers, and they made me nervous. So yeah, no, we came and we sublet an apartment on East 77th Street. My way to get here was I enrolled in a 2-week dance workshop at the Martha Graham School, and I said, I'm going to New York for a month, and I'm going to study at Martha Graham. And then then the month was almost up, and they're like, "So, do you need money for a plane ticket?" I go, "Oh, I'm not coming home." And that was, a little.
Wow.
That's when the Baskin Robbins became a very.
And Tony was here.
And Tony was here, but they didn't know he was with me, so we were like,
"Oh my gosh,
sneaky."
Yeah, so we were being really sneaky.
So, how did you get to New York with a job, or did you?
No, I knew I was going to New York. That was it. I told you from 8 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
I knew that. And then by 14,
but then
I knew
when it really happens, that's a big.
No, it was never. It was always that. From 14, it's like from 8, I was going to New York.
So you were very
from
zen
14,
about
I was going for theater.
Yeah.
Right.
So it was
and
like,
regardless of what my family had to say, I was like, "Bump y'all, this is what I'm doing."
Oh wow.
So I knew what I had to do to appease them, which was try to keep my grades up as much as possible, apply to all the right colleges, get in them, and then turn them down because I was going to New York. So
I did that too.
So what'd you get into? Right. Tell us what you got into.
Everything. I got them all. I got into all of them. And I was
God.
So, okay, I'm getting into them all. And then there was a couple of like, okay, how about like you be an engineer and give you a scholarship? I was like, no, how about no? Because like I hate math. But it was just all about, I knew my parents. Yeah, I knew my family. Brilliant. I knew them. It was like, if I don't do this, if I don't have these grades, if I don't have these options, I will be looked down upon. And therefore, I will not get any support. So, even with that, you know, the choice was still, there was a lot of wussying, honey. The choice was still not, you know, the bougie black choice. It just was not. So,
where did you
matter.
Live?
I got to NYU. I did it right, baby. I got an NYU. I had a cousin in the Bronx. I got my work study.
So you went to NYU.
I went to NYU for 2 years.
There's
got
a
my
play
work
you
study
look
on.
At. Do you know about Stryver's Row?
Oh. Yeah, I do.
It's a great play.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Drivers of Harlem.
I would make that 2-hour commute from the Bronx down to NYU every day until I met some friends and I wound up crashing on their floors. And then I just started
It's
digging.
A great, wonderful adventure.
Yes, it is. Yeah. NYU taught me what I needed to know about the city. And I did. I worked with Herbert Dale, which was cool. I met the best voice teacher on earth, Joseph Scott.
So, yeah, who helped you here?
Joseph Scott gave me a vocal technique that I now teach that he didn't get to be the great icon he should be. Mm. And so he was a genius, and thank God for him. And we got to work with Grover Dale, people like that, you know, the whole NYU, when they started doing their whole musical theater thing, and that was interesting. But it was mostly, like I said, I had family close by,
and
then
fantastic.
My friends, David Michael Johnson, oh my gosh, such a talented man. He lives in Germany now, but he like immediately got on Broadway at like 19. He was just one of those ridiculous talents. And I had a good network of friends and people who were, we were all just.
Yeah, I guess the point is you need a support system. And when I teach, I say, you know, because a lot of kids, their parents aren't supporting of it, you know?
Oh, yes.
Or
and
they're weirdly supportive.
Mom was cool. Mom was cool.
Well, they can be way too pushy? Think that they know.
Oh, what to do?
I don't allow parents in the room.
I have my mom at my back. That's something I have to really stress. That's one of the reasons I'm taking care of her now at 98. That's why I had a hard time getting here this morning. She understood that I had to be who I had to be, regardless of what the family thought.
Thank you so much.
And
I
think she wanted me to go. She's a very independent woman of her own, so she was cool. She's like, okay, last kid out of the house, yay. She sold that house and gave her the money I had saved to fix the roof on the house, and I waited 6 months to come to school, and then she sold the house and gave me back that money plus, and then I came on to New York and
fantastic.
Beautiful.
That's your mom?
That's my mom.
That's
her now.
That's fantastic.
Wow. 98? Mm-hmm.
She's your champion.
Wow. Yes, she is.
She lives with you and
yes.
Awesome.
Thank you.
So Missy, and you got to hear how did you make the trip?
Well, at 7, thank you. I guess we just need forks.
Yeah.
At 7, I traveled here because both my parents grew up in New Rochelle. And we drove across country in a Fiat. They added a seatbelt in the back for me. So we had three in the back, my grandmother and my mother, in a rack with no air conditioning.
Oh,
you know,
my
we
gosh.
Drove across.
Oh, my gosh.
I remember it as, like, one of the greatest trips ever.
I bet.
I mean, it was really fantastic.
Virgin.
And we got to New York, met all these massive amounts of cousins and stuff, and went to Manhattan. And I was like... What? It wasn't even theater at this point. It was Manhattan.
It was just energy.
Yeah, no, it's just, it's not, yeah.
And I remember, this sounds crazy, but I have a memory of a little old lady, hand on this car, throwing up between the cars, and I was like, I'm going to live here. This is it.
Like, the night Tony and I drove in,
and
now we just got our food, but somebody was actually taking a dump.
I mean,
I told you, I noticed weird people. I was just like, look at these crazy people. All
right?
These clothes and wow, this is awesome.
She just is living her life.
You can be whoever you want to be.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
So, bon appetit, everyone.
Yes. Bon appetit. Do you have some bread?
Sure.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Am I jingly? No.
You're always
just
a little jingly.
Little jingly. It's okay.
Yeah, but then I came to New York on a ballet scholarship at 16.
Oh,
so
that's
I
great.
Lived for a summer with
that.
Melissa Hayden. Do you
oh
remember?
My God!
Oh, yeah, I remember.
I took class with Melissa at ABT.
Yeah, I loved Melissa.
I'm a fangirl. You guys have to understand this. All this conversation you guys are having, I am so fangirl. You have done things and known people and worked with people that I have only ever dreamed about. It is
well,
not crazy.
As like, have you. Come on.
But I'm still, I'm just like, why am I sitting
You were like that to the, oh, the youngins that you...
Please.
I get it. I know that.
You know. They look up at you and they oh, my God.
Dude, I told you when we did Love Loss that you were my rent. That's what Chorus Line was.
Yeah. No kidding, right?
That's what gave me the freedom.
Isn't
to
that,
be.
Isn't that fantastic?
And I,
that's just
so,
the best thing you can hear.
Yeah.
No, that's you know, and when I was, when did you open in L.A.?
1932.
So I was three in 1932.
Just 3 years? Well, you were born in 27.
I don't
so.
Know. When I opened?
You're going to be 92.
Probably 76 or something.
That was
yeah. 78, 77.
Yeah, so my brothers 76. And my, we all went down, bought the album that you could open up.
Yeah.
It saw you. Yeah, it was the original company. You guys had all just gotten there.
That
freaking haircut. I just thought was the cutest thing I'd ever seen. And then my brother and I, Linus, we would stretch to a Chorus Line for 3 months every night straight. We were stretching and getting, it's like, it was like just our imaginations were going.
That's
crazy.
What I look like in a Chorus Line.
Yeah. It does eyelashes.
Yep.
That's oh my gosh, is that you right behind you?
And there's Katie.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's like what helped me when I was growing up, I like you, Marcia, I would be the television, the variety shows, MGM musicals. And the thing that I've never stopped being starstruck with when I would see like Ann Miller, Sid Charisse, Fred Astaire, Angela Lansbury.
Well, the Ed Sullivan Show.
And,
that was it in our house.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Sunday night.
And then I was on Ed Sullivan. You know, it's like I never lost that that appreciation, I guess.
But what's your Chorus Line? If Chorus Line is it for us, did you have a particular show?
Well, yeah, I mean, the movies. And then when I worked with these, you know, these women. When I worked with Sid Charisse and Angela Lansbury, and I had to choreograph a number for her, and Leslie Caron.
Wow.
I was so...
Crazy.
Thank you.
It never diminished, you know, my appreciation of them. But when I saw them in their vulnerability, having to work with them eye to eye as an artist,
right.
And really put, you know, thought and get the, you know, the starstruck kid out of there a little bit. They taught me more about how to be, because I never went to college, because Arnett Mader, who was a great dance teacher in, where is he? I can't remember. Virginia. I toured with him when I was 15, and he said, you know, you can't go to college. You have to go to New York and get into a company or dance, because a dancer's life, it's too short. You know?
Like, if you weren't doing it by 16, you just were too late.
Oh, wow. Right. Dude, you got 5 minutes. That's it.
So, you know, that those women, you know, were just to be able to see them. In other words, I looked up to them, and I saw them I saw them in such a human way sometimes.
Amazing.
I love that one.
I mean, at that Philadelphia concert, whoever was the conductor,
Who was it?
I think it was Neil Berg, but I
Neil
you know.
Berg, not Eric Stern.
But that you sang "Music in the Mirror."
Oh, mm-hmm.
And I burst
Did
into
you
tears.
Lose that?
I burst into tears
for the right reason, I hope.
Which reason would that be? No, you're just the most glorious thing. Yeah. I was like, I'm sure my jaw was on the ground. And
well, when they called me to do the concert, Andrea and Donna performed the entire show for me at a tiny little studio up at 72nd Street Studios, right? And I'm sitting this far away from her, and she starts at the ballet. Just gone. Just ridiculous.
Oh my God. I got to get out more often.
Oh, my gosh.
This is great.
I just was gone.
Kudos.
I called my mother when I got home. I was like, you have no idea what I just saw. I was just like
a dear friend of mine.
I'm very tough on the outside, Don, but I am like
no, completely
mashed potatoes, right, inside.
A dear friend of mine is a rising playwright. His name is Bob Stewart. Remember his name.
Okay.
I've said many times he's going to be the next O'Neill, and I know people are like, what? But I'm like, no, really, you don't get it. He's also the biggest musical theater geek in the world. And he wanted to be Fosse, you know, type thing. But no one knows musical theater history better than him. The facts, the dates, it's better than Google. If I need to know anything, I just call him.
Like, well, that's fantastic.
And when I told him I was doing Love Lost with you, he's like, what? I haven't told him about this. I can't wait to tell him about this. He's going to absolutely plot. Just great. And of course I said thoughts. And so I'm going to shut up because, like I said, I feel completely out of my league right now. So I'm enjoying us, Alan, and listening to these amazing stories and you guys talking about people that I only dream of meeting and why I came here.
I tell you, who's been mentioned a few times?
Oh, I've never eaten at Sardi's before.
Hello, everybody.
Ta-da.
I just want to, pardon me for interrupting. I just want to say hello and welcome you all.
Thank you so much, Max.
Thank you. Yes.
Hi.
Hi, Max.
This is Freddie Walker Brown.
Hey, Freddie,
nice to meet you.
Marsha Milgram Dodge.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Katie, we've met.
Yes, how are you?
Good to see you. Thank you for this, to enable us to do this wonderful lunch.
Now, why there is no tablecloth on this table, huh?
Apparently, this is a very nice table.
It's the table, right?
I know, that's the table.
We want to show all of the love and the wear and tear and everything.
I tell you what.
That's what we
are.
That's
us, right?
When I first came here in 1973, I saw this whole table back then. I said, what is this whole table doing here? They said, well, this is Mama and Papa's table. This was a table that belonged to Vincent and Eugenia Sori.
Fantastic.
So, here we are, sitting around it.
It still stands today.
No, it's fantastic.
Anyway, stories this table could tell.
And we're telling it. We're going to tell you a few stories today.
Anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's
thank you so much.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Wow.
They mentioned it a few times. Very sweet. It's Bob Fosse. We both worked with him.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's just like so.
When I, you know,
it's crazy.
When you did Big Deal, when did you were, 80, you had 86. Already done a Broadway show, right?
Yeah. I did Lacage before that.
And
Big Deal, I remember.
And this was just, the Big Deal had just closed, I think, before Fosse did his last production that I was in.
Charity.
Yeah. Right? It had closed.
It were sort of happening simultaneously right at the end. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he was in the next room at the Minskoff Studios. Mm-hmm. Gwen and Mimi Quillen.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about being, you know... I never marked anything. Gwen was in the room.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
And she taught me every step, every move, every nuance of her role that was given to her, you know, designed for her. And it wasn't lost on me. And so but Fosse, you know, so it was her job. Like, she worked with Jack Cole. You know, she never wanted to choreograph. She always wanted to be the assistant because she loved the work. You know, when you're talking about being in the rehearsal room, when you create. But she loved to get the work right, to really define it, someone else's choreography. But she taught me this role, and I remember at one point she said, now we're in the closet scene, and she said, would you like to do, I know, let's see, I have Cheetah's version, I have Annie's version, I have Debbie's version, and I have my version. Which would you like?
Wow.
And I said, I think I'll take your version.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And... It was, I was very, you know, she was my first dance captain on Broadway. Mm. I mean, she was a big star. She was between jobs, but Fosse came in without any pre-production on how to succeed in business without really trying.
Yeah.
Because Hugh Lambert was let go. There were 3 days in a row where Hugh, who we loved, who hired us, the dancers in that show.
Yeah.
Remember Paris Original from mm-hmm. that show, if you know the score? I thought it was great, and but he worked on it more than 2 days. He worked on it 3 days, wasn't able to solve it, and the next day we came in and Hugh was gone.
Wow.
Oh. Our dad was gone.
Wow.
And then the day after that, Bob Fosse came in with Gwen Verdon, and they
That's crazy.
Started working with us. And we had to do, I mean, just wonderful, wonderful things. And this was my first show. And that's when I made the decision. I went, I want to do this because I was a little ballet girl. Mm, and ballet too. Girls, if you remember.
Oh, yeah, no, it was different.
I auditioned in a pink leotard with my ballet slippers on.
Well, you know, I don't know about the West Coast ballet girls, but.
I don't know about you, Midwest.
The East Coast ballet girls. Well, we look down on musical theater. Mm-hmm. It's like a fear thing, maybe.
Oh, please, that's back when people say, oh, I'll never do commercials.
Yeah, right.
I laugh out loud.
I'll go to Japan and do a commercial.
I'll do whatever you want to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you kidding?
So anyway. So Gwen, I have to tell you this story about Fosse because I want to get back to Fosse. You have to do this with me, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So Fosse was fantastic, and Gwen told me later, I mean, this was like 1960, they would go home and when they lived on that, you know, fabulous apartment that was in that series recently, they would be jumping up and down. Yeah, yeah, they would be jumping up and down on the bed choreographing the next day's work because they had no pre-production. Anyway, so segue to Fosse's in the next room working on a ballet.
Mm-hmm.
And while Gwen and Mimi, the dance captain, it was for something. He never finished it.
It was for the Joffrey, yeah.
And so we would be doing our, you know, they would be putting through my paces, and then he would come in the room and sit on the side of like the wall, this enormous room, and he'd say, "Don't mind me, I'm just watching."
Yeah.
But slowly, as Gwen and Mimi and I worked, you know, and I was learning it. He started moving over, and he ended up in front of us.
Of course.
You know? And it was like, the point is, I guess, that the work
pulled him
into it. And
gorgeous
he was,
women, too.
Yes. And yeah. But he really loved the work, and he was so, you know, and Gwen said, you know, he never, once he does a show, that's it. He doesn't go and visit, but... He invested a lot in that that company, you know, because he came to see us every city.
Yep.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
I never worked with Bob Fosse, but when I was a sophomore at Michigan, I wrote letters to Bob Fosse, Jerome Robbins, Pat Birch, and Danny Daniels, and said, "I want to be a choreographer. What do I do?" And Bob Fosse called me.
See, that's who he was. That's who he was. That's the story that doesn't get told.
Oh, my gosh. That was like, I was on my way to my opening night of Godspell, which I had just choreographed for Soft Show. And I lived above Mr. Tony's sub shop. And I was down at the bottom of the stairs locking my door. And I heard my phone ring. And I was carrying, like, you know, opening night presents and junk. So I dropped my thing, run up the stairs. Hello. Hello, Marsha. This is Bob Fosse. I'm like, yeah, right. You wrote me a letter. You had so many questions. I thought I better call you. And I literally, slithered down the wall and sat there on this phone, 1975, talking to Bob Fosse about Carol Haney and dancing and all the movies I saw and how he's been such an inspiration. And then at the end, he was like, "Send me a picture, and when you come to New York, I'll audition you." And I said, I had no headshot. Like, I didn't know what that was. I had just done a family photo shoot for my parents' anniversary. So I was, like, hugging a tree. I was like this.
Hugging a tree.
In a dress, in this little blue dress and my platform shoes. And I was hugging a tree with my Dorothy Hamill haircut. And I sent that picture to Bob Fosse. I mean, seriously.
I mean, seriously.
I know. And then I became very friendly with his secretary, whose name I can't remember, but I would check in with her every now and then. Hi, what's he doing? Where is he?
Like,
I was so naive.
You have the right attitude about all of it. Yeah. It's so great.
Well, my dad was
that,
a,
right?
You know.
Just call who you want to call. Talk to who you want to talk to.
He was the sales executive at his family business, and he would like, tell him who you are. You
yeah,
know,
that
was
I always, had no idea I could do
dude,
that.
I wish that had all my assistants.
No.
He called me. That's I mean, no,
but
no
you know,
phone
you
machine
say,
or anything. I couldn't, he, I didn't record it.
The
nothing.
Only thing just, that I feel your... that the image of Fosse, that the chauvinist, the you know, the male, the thing,
whatever.
I never, you know, maybe I wasn't
Me neither.
This type.
I wasn't but, either, so,
but
you know.
I never got that. But what I got was someone like that.
Yeah.
You know, I got someone
who... He loved
who
his dancers.
Loved his dancers and really cared. I mean, when we had no name in the chorus, they called it a chorus then, not an ensemble, because we actually did have a chorus line.
He was.
Well, you had a vocal, you had a singing chorus and
yeah,
a dancing
we had a
chorus.
And a dancing
so
right.
He was the one who
no
changed
more.
That nomenclature. He changed it to ensemble.
He
yeah.
changed it
because
yeah.
we were like all of his shows. Those dancers in Sweet Charity were handpicked, every single one
yeah.
of them. And what I loved about him, my first experience, kind of was the way he was with all of his shows. He picked like Dick Korthaz and all these people that were very different heights, different
yeah.
body shapes, different
mm-hmm.
character, because it was all about it was acting based.
Telling right. the story.
We had to do a page history of our character that had no name.
Yeah.
You know, so we had to go who we knew in the company, you know, the company way. And who
oh.
we and where every time we made an end. Well, the first one was a little biography.
And you gave yourself a name or no?
Yeah, we gave
you
ourselves.
Gave yourself
a name. Yeah, and we gave ourselves a little history of the relationships with everybody else.
Right.
And Gwen was the first person that said to me, "When you come on stage, you have to be coming from somewhere."
Yeah.
Yep.
And then when you leave, you have to be going somewhere. You know, like little things like that. You know,
little
if you don't.
Little Stanislavski
yeah.
in there. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Little Pavlova thrown in on the side.
Mm.
Absolutely. No, I always say, people say, what did you learn from Fosse? I say, he made me a better actor.
Yeah.
That's what he did for me. I could already kick my face, spin,
right.
jump, whatever you needed to
right.
do, right?
Right. When he finally came in, after he moved his way around to the front, he finally decided to direct our show.
Oh,
I mean, he came
oh,
but he put his 2 cents
yeah.
in. So, you know,
I think he was scared of that Joffrey.
So yes, I think he was. He was taking a long break from that.
Wow.
But he would come in and say, okay, so go upstage, you know, if he's leaving, you know, go upstage, turn upstage. And I go, but turning my back, I'm talking
oh.
up my back to the audience. I'm talking. He goes, oh, I forgot. You're from that show where everybody stands like
wow.
this, shoulders front.
Wow. And that was 1960?
What?
That was 1960-ish?
No, this was Sweet Charity.
Oh, Sweet Charity.
This was like a few months before he
86.
Died.
86.
Gotcha.
Yeah. It was 86? Yeah, 86.
86.
But he was great. I know as a director, you know, and you direct and everything. You direct. I mean, you have, and I once in a while, but I mean, you have responsibility to, you know, the time is now a thing with money and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But in the when I first started, and with Fosse, even in, you know, 86, if you rehearsed a scene once, you did it minimum 6 times.
Mm.
Minimum. And we would do that one scene in the this guy's, you know, I can't remember his character's name, but I would be sitting at the bar eating the olives and everything, and it was all timed with dialogue. And I did it, you know, like 10 times, and I would say, give me a note. I mean, am I doing something wrong?
Right.
And he would say, no, just do it again.
Oh,
okay. Can you do it better? Yeah, eventually, yeah. He goes, okay, well, then just do it again. Oh. So doing
just the
it
repetition.
Again,
and being
course,
an actor, being a dancer,
he's like had all the techniques.
But what
and
that
being
is,
a dancer, you just
yeah.
did rehearse
but,
that,
yeah.
but,
right?
But also, but what it does, what he was doing, and it took me a while to figure it out. You get out of your head.
Yeah.
Yep.
You, it becomes
that.
Just impulse.
It becomes
the
a muscle memory
yes.
as opposed to trying to remember
and
your
then
lines.
That's
the
when
choreography,
you're free,
right? Exactly.
That's when you're free to feel and bring your personality to bear and breathe.
Exactly. And that's when you're your most authentic.
Yeah.
When you're not thinking.
Yeah.
Everybody asks
about
the
judging,
long run.
And
all
you're in
that
the moment.
Yeah.
You can play the moment, and
yeah.
it's just it's a. But it, you know, he taught me a lot.
That's a question everybody asks about doing a long run, doing a show for a year or 2 years or something like that. And that's the beauty of it. The more you do it, the deeper it gets.
Isn't it amazing?
Especially if the material is good to start off with. And so time you approach it, it's a brand new thing. And you get to just go in, you know, and dive into that story again.
And you get that gift of 2 years in. I walk on. I'm like, how did I never do that before?
You see what I'm saying? Well, probably because you weren't directed to do that before. And that's the other
thing. But it's not that. It's like the minutia of why didn't Ula think that?
How long did you, was that your longest run?
2.5 years, yeah.
And Rent was how long?
Two is the longest I think I have.
How to Succeed was the longest. I was in the show 2 years, which provided me with the university that I had never went to. I took my $166 a week.
Oh, my God. Oh, sweet.
Because my apartment was like $75 a month.
Don't even say it. Shut up.
And I, oh, my God. Dance class was $1.50.
Oh, wow. How much are they now?
It was up to me to go.
15, 20? 20.
I had to pay for all of my classes. So I thought, well, this is, you know, the show. This is a big hit. I was very lucky, and I knew. Of all the silly things I've done in my life, that was a really smart thing. I just, you know, joined acting class, and I had voice lessons, and, you know, and it was 2 years. That was like going to college in a way, you know.
Yeah,
What's great, when I go to colleges and do master classes, it's wonderful to see the young students. Oh, my God, they're so good. And they have theater programs, and they have musical theater programs, and they're ready. They're biting at the bit, you know. They're getting their training. It's like you being able to choreograph in a safe way.
Yeah.
You know, being able to do a
whole
production.
But I have no time anymore. They don't give us any time.
No, that's a problem, isn't it?
So the pre-pro is all on me.
Yeah.
And you know, my assistant or, you know, and then staying up all night and prepping for the next day, just like he and Gwen did on the bed. Yeah. I mean, most of the pre-pro happens.
Jumping around
in the hotel room and, you know, Jupiter, Florida, or wherever I am, you know. I just did Cinderella at the Muni with a cast of 50 and puppets and the new Douglas Carter Bean script.
I've never played
11
the
days.
You haven't?
I'm from St. Louis. I've never played the Muni. It breaks my heart.
Because you don't have a preference for frozen custard. No, I'm kidding. I have a whole frozen custard thing. All right, so we'll get you to the Muni.
Please. I'm serious. It breaks my heart. It's one of the first theaters I learned.
It's an amazing It's an amazing place. It's beyond theater. It's culture.
It's so beautiful.
I did Meet Me in St. Louis last season, their 100th anniversary.
Oh, that's right.
100th season.
That's right.
Wow.
We did Meet Me in St. Louis. Gordon Greenberg did a new script and made it very St. Louis centric. Mm-hmm. Like opened with a Beat the Cardinals, you know, how'd the Cardinals do last night, Grandpa? Beat Chicago again. Huge. 11,000 people laughing at the first joke first line of the show.
Yeah.
And it was thrilling. And we had fireworks and
it's
we had a trolley. And
see.
It was, you know, they're doing Paint Your Wagon, a new script right now. And they have
Rodney's
two horses. Rodney's in it. Yep. Yeah.
That's
no, it's a great place.
Now, the Italian man, if I'm not mistaken, I was told this story. That he built that for his opera singing wife, that theater.
Really?
Because his grandson was my yoga instructor down on West 26th Street. John.
Me neither.
Yeah.
I mean, they used to do it with like a cast of hundreds.
Well, this was started.
It's huge, right?
I've never been.
This 80-foot proscenium.
Wow.
This beautiful opera singer, he wanted to marry her and give her a place to sing.
Sounds like she married William Randolph Hearst.
Yeah. Well, he built it. He had it built and so that they could live together in their marriage in St. Louis.
All right. I have to go Google that.
Yeah. That's worth Googling.
I got to Google that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you never worked at the Muni either?
Never.
But you did.
I did a couple times. I did the apple tree, which was kind of
silly. Oh, which is crazy.
Because the pool was like literally this big, the pool. And everyone's going, what are they looking at?
Exactly.
You know, and then we did a chorus line there. And, of course, you have to the difficulty of the rain. It was rained on.
Yeah.
And I at one point, they were mopping it up. But, you know, if you're dance rubber and you're in character shoes and you're... And there was a little...
Well, now they've redone the stage.
Oh,
it's
really?
It's got a new surface.
And the magical thing that happens now, because they have a 45-foot diameter turntable, that in pre-renovation, when the turntable turned, there was always an edge, because it's a raked stage, because they want the water to go into a trough. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a mechanism under the turntable, so when it turns, it never is raked. Like, it stays in the relationship of the rake of the stage. But you never get that lip.
Oh, wow.
So it adjusts itself as it's turning.
So have they solved the problem?
Magical. I know. I was like, wait a minute. There's no like trip edge.
So have they solved the problem of when you're standing in line doing a chorus line and you see the
thunder, the clouds.
You see the bugs and you see the light on the person speaking and you're going to be up next and you see them... And the bugs go in there.
This summer they had a major cottonwood tree.
Oh, there.
They were flying in my throat and my ears and my nose. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Here we go.
Coffee is just amazingly awesome.
Okay. Yeah, coffee would be great.
Coffee. I have some pre-pro I need to do later.
So what are you doing?
She's the only one who didn't get to eat.
I'm directing.
He took it out
very quickly as well. A curious incident up in New Hampshire.
I did it. Oh God, I love it.
I can't wait. I know it's crazy.
So you be the first one to tell us what you're doing right now as we kind of wind up with our coffee. You're
okay.
What are you doing?
Yeah. Well,
what are you doing?
Our friend. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I will.
Well, first
leave.
Of all, the Peggy Lee show is
Peggy Lee. I'll do that on the 31st, and on the 1st, I drive up to New Hampshire with my cat and direct Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime at In a Barn.
Love it.
It's so interesting because that's a very interesting play. There's 58 scenes in this play.
I did the regional premiere in St. Louis.
That's why I'm looking at you, because we don't have any hydraulics.
I didn't do any technology. I did it old-fashioned theater.
Yeah, this is old-fashioned theater, but my designer, I had envisioned kind of two-sided flat things that could move around to create. Mm-hmm. And he came up with a three-sided, like triangular. Mm-hmm. So the triangles are taking over the stage, right? So it's a very triangular concept that can create like roof lines trains and stuff like that. So we're going to see.
Yeah,
see
it's fantastic.
But I'm counting on my lighting designer. I'm like, Scout, this is your show because you need to tell
us. Sound? Are you
where to
working
look.
With
and
a sound? Sound.
Doing sound, doing my own music. Yeah. Creating my own sound. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not counting on theirs because it's so techno.
No, I did my own. I mean, I worked with David Bullard, who's a wonderful designer, and I had a whole list. I want these kind of pieces, and I want this accompanying that. And so it was very,
it's not going to be that grand, because I will have 6 days in the studio.
Oh, gosh, I don't even know. Like, they were going to give me 2 weeks, and I was like, no, you need to give me three. Like, and it was the
God
first
bless.
Show of the season at the Rep, and I was like, they were treating it like, you know, a revival of some
little
Neil
play.
Thing, you know, Neil Simon play or something. And I'm like, this is choreographed. Mm-hmm. This is top to bottom.
That's
I want 3 weeks.
Yeah,
you got it.
It's all.
I got it.
I mean, Mike Christopher is going to be all those long speeches.
Yeah. Do you have someone who's done it before? Or
no, he's learning it. He's up there right now in Rep. So when I start rehearsing, Mike Christopher will be in three musicals at the same time.
Yeah.
What theater is this? Weather Vane?
The Weather Vane.
Okay. I'm excited though.
No,
truly.
Oh,
I mean, God.
No, if it scares the crap out of you, it's worth doing.
I'm out of my mind, scared, can't sleep.
Yeah.
Nothing's right now. But I keep myself busy because
so
I'm doing
good.
My Peggy Lee and I'm doing a thing at UCB on Monday just to keep myself like crazy.
That's right.
So I'm not just obsessed about that.
Yeah. It's fantastic. It's really great.
Are you up to? Teaching?
She's got
I definitely teach, which I love very much. Thank you, Carrie Ann Spellman, for ran to her an audition one day, and she was like, come teach at the school. You're living out here by me. And I was like, yeah. And I love it. I write twice a year. I write shows for them. The last show, they chose race as the topic. Terrifying, but the show came out amazingly well. And I couldn't be happier that those particular students and families have that show as a context by which to absorb the current political situations, right?
Where is this?
This is in Jersey. In Monmouth County, which is the artsiest county ever, and I love living there. I love it. Yeah, no, you get the beach, you get the arts, you get Springsteen and rock and roll. It's just awesome place to live. So, but I was on a roll.
Thank you.
I've written several films and a television series, and I'm shopping them, and I have two documentaries underway.
Wow.
And all of that was really on a roll until 2 years ago when my mom got sick. She got sick, I had to go get her, and then 2 months later, I got hit by a car and almost died.
I'd heard that. But
what?
What?
I saw you on YouTube. You were doing a performance somewhere, and you were...
Thank you.
You explained that, or you...
That was
people?
For Broadway Con, which is my new favorite
oh,
thing.
Oh, my God.
I love Anthony for doing that so much. Anthony,
oh,
Lewis,
yeah.
Oh, my God. It's just the best thing ever.
Best thing ever.
I so used to be a con hater, and now I'm like, I so get it. Okay, I'm in. I'm totally in.
Oh, wow.
So I hang on.
So, Freddie, that was 2 years ago?
Yeah, and so basically
you're not
the
dead.
Last 2 years... I'm not dead, yay. And the last 2 years have been about, thank you, taking care of mom, recovering my body so that I can work eventually again. Mm-hmm. And and I've still been writing, though. I've started an album. So that's really my obsession for the next few weeks is going to be the album one. Hashtag 1P1P.
God bless.
You have to come back and do your rap songs. You have to come back and do your rap
songs.
Somebody
said to me recently,
I want the Broadway community to sing on 1P1P. So I'm going to be...
You're going to get my number after this.
I just reached out to George Salazar. I want him to do the food poisoning song.
I can't even believe George is now like a star.
Isn't that great?
I worked with him at the Huntington several years ago during a 3-week workshop of a Filipino musical about the salmon canning industry in Alaska in the 1920s.
Okay.
It was the greatest cast. If you, if you know the Filipino culture, that is like the most family-oriented, beautiful culture. So I fell in love with this cast. I was the big gringo. I was seducing Telly Leon.
Oh, my gosh.
Where was this done?
Up at the Huntington in Boston.
Oh, my God.
But now it's like George was
What's the name
one
of the show?
Guys. The Long Season. It was very interesting. It was very kind of operatic.
Yeah.
And I got to sing my husband, who's... like literally was castrated or something in a salmon canning incident, which is why I'm now, you know, I'm...
So you're interested
in
telling.
Oh my gosh. But he was an operatic baritone and I was this musical theater. So he came from the notes, which of course I know the notes, but I came from the acting part of it. It was like interesting to put it all together.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's how I know George.
Wow.
Who is now a freaking Broadway star.
Which we love.
Yes.
And how about Ally Stroker?
Which was awesome.
How about Ally Stroker, who
yes.
won the Tony for Oklahoma
right?
a year before,
gosh, yes.
1 year to the day, she and I were doing the Spelling Bee musical in Cleveland at the Playhouse, and she rolled herself into rehearsal that day with the saddest face, and I said, "What is the matter?" She goes, "My flight was canceled. I can't get back to New York for the Oklahoma callback." So that night, we buoyed her up. We rehearsed, blah, blah, blah. And that night, she put a video together with her boyfriend. And they sent it off. And a year to the day later, she got
Sweet.
A Tony.
Oh, my God.
I mean, don't
I know,
you love
so
that?
Crazy.
I know.
Oh,
I like
happy endings.
Anytime something happens like that, it's mine.
Yeah.
It's like, I get so possessed. That's my Ally Stroker.
Oh,
you know,
please.
It's like,
yeah. MJ Rodriguez is mine.
MJ. Oh, my gosh.
I found him. He did my writing partner, she passed. One of the greatest playwrights. I have 4 amazing musicals sitting in my back pocket.
Mm.
I really do.
You're going to do
she was,
right?
Hers, yes.
Yeah.
She was incredible. You understand? So, Cage Bird. We were doing Cage Bird. I think it was Cage Bird. And I picked him to do a piece, and then I just remembered him, and when time came for the off-Broadway rent, I was like, Michael, I've got your angel.
Oh.
And the rest is...
Wow.
Wow. Isn't that amazing?
And now Pose. And Mr. Billy Porter, who I
we love.
Had a little something with
How
getting him his
Billy
equity
Porter?
Card.
You did?
I was the choreographer on Romance and Hard Times at the Public.
Sweet.
And he was Victor Trent Cook's understudy. And he got his equity
sweet.
Card.
Sweet.
So I claim Billy Porter.
That's
too.
It. He's yours.
He's
yours. He's yours. I love it.
Yeah. I know. It's crazy.
I love it.
Well, it is.
And
it's
you
such
do
a small...
work on that side of things, of the choreographing and directing. So you see us in a very different light than what our, I mean, even though we do other things, like you are really.
She's a wonderful director.
No. Picking, like, so you're, you know, well, that special person.
Who's right for this.
Also just knowing, like, somebody like Allie or something from, you know, it's just like, it's just a different thing.
But also, if you've never, I'm going to brag on you a little bit. If you've never worked with Marsha, you can tell by just what the person she is, just from meeting you. I mean, but you did such a great work with us.
We had so much fun.
And so it's like, you're mine. That's mine.
Exactly.
But also, but you know, it's like to have it, it taught me another great lesson. I almost forgot, but I've always believed it. Everybody needs a director. You, when you're putting something together, I mean, you can get so far on your own. You know what I mean? Inventing and initiating things. But at a certain point, when you just leave the hemisphere, you need someone. And you were so great with us, you know?
Thank you. Well, you know, it's interesting because I do teach a little off and on, adjunct all over the place. And I try to make my students think about being director-proof. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you have to come in.
Do the work. Mm-hmm. Right.
You got to do the work. Yeah. We're not going to say, play this action and reach for the salt shaker like this. You know, we're going we want you to bring it so that we can shape it, edit it.
Right? I tell them all the time, the best thing is when I'm not saying anything to you.
If I'm not saying anything to you,
that means you are right on point, and then I can spend my time and energy, which is more limited than ever. I can spend my time and energy, you know, putting out the fires and doing the dump.
Right.
No, it's like, no, if I'm not, I tell them at the top of the rehearsal process, if I am not talking to you and I am not nagging you about something,
I'm happy.
You are doing it. You are making my life perfect.
This was the moment. It's not that I had never gotten this message before, but this time I got the message. I was rehearsing the Will Rogers Follies, you know, 25 years old, first time being starring on Broadway. We're doing this workshop of it. They took the Niederlander. They built the stair. We rehearsed the whole thing in the Niederlander Theater.
Oh my God.
It was really amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. But I had
What year was this?
That would have been 1990 that we did that. Yeah.
Because it had been closed. The last show to be in there was the Lena Horne. And when was that?
Mm-hmm. I don't know, but it was close.
Lena Horne was in the 80s.
81.
So you guys were in there after that?
Yeah.
In 1990. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a hole.
Yeah, well, that's what they told. That's why they picked it for us.
Exactly. But so I'm rehearsing, and I have this silly little speech. Ladies and gentlemen, and live from blah, 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 in Texas, Jack Mulhall's Wild West Show. And I'm like, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? What do I do? So I basically did nothing. Just said the words and like walked off. And Tommy Tan comes up, Katie, do something.
Do something.
Oh shit, because I'm from the ballet world where you literally wait for somebody to tell you what to do. And so I literally threw the kitchen sink. I mean, I was doing cartwheels into the splits, kicks, like everything I could do. I mean, my head was on fire. I was so nervous. My ears were going to come off. And I was like, oh, good Lord. But I was like, Texas Jack Mulhall. Wow. You know, everything's good. And the people in rehearsal, because we're in this, in the Niederlander, they're like laughing. And I'm just getting hotter and hotter and hotter. And, and I run off stage. And he goes, well, now we can start.
Oh,
but that's it.
Come in with all of it. Throw it out there.
I'd rather take things away.
That's exactly right.
It's like, let's just put it in there.
Yeah. Yes.
When they stand there and do nothing, I just want to, you know.
I get that when they're doing, like when they're young and they're learning, I'm like, story is our job.
Yeah. Absolutely.
The story is first. When I actually teach a song, we rap every song. I take the music out. We do the pitches. I mean, we do the rhythms and the lyrics. So that you can get the feel of the song, but that you're also getting the story, because how do you disconnect? And that's another thing when people have young kids doing inappropriate types of music. They're singing this stuff that's way too adult for
them. Yeah.
You know, and it's not cute. That's like, that's not cute. That's
the
really
man I love.
Not good. Or whatever.
I'd say take back your mink when I was nine.
No, please.
But she knew what it meant.
I had another one. That, which is not so great. And I had one just trying to do A Heart Belongs to Daddy the other day. And I'm like, do you know what this song is really about?
Oh, gosh.
She's like, well, kind of. And I was like, yeah, do you really think you should be doing this? She's like, eh. I was like, no, why don't we do something for Thoroughly Modern Millie, right?
Yeah.
Something that's like, I love that song. Not for the life
not
of me.
Not for the life of me.
Talk about all of our experience rolled into. I wish that song had existed when, you know, I was like, that's my, this
that
is
would
me.
Be your song.
That was it. I'm like, oh my
God. But I came, this really dates me, but I Enjoy Being a Girl was the only song that every young thing was singing.
At least that's, you can at least, I mean, you know,
or
in the Me Too Age.
Honey Bun was honey a big one.
And the Me Too Age girls don't connect to that song. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. They really don't. Which is, it's really interesting.
Oh, yes,
what,
of course. I
what
mean, you
teenage
would, yeah.
girls want to sing versus what we
yes,
grew up wanting
yes,
to
yes.
sing. And I love it, actually. I love that they're very empowered. But I also make sure that they all get connected to their femininity because I'm like, you're a show business baby, and
yes.
femininity is one of your weapons. You need it as a part of your back.
Come on. I've never sung anything just straightforward. You know, there's message within. Message within message.
Some of us have that built into us, but some don't.
Yeah, exactly.
And you have to make them aware of it.
What? How do you relate to this song?
Yes.
How do? Mm-hmm. Who are you singing to? And I say to all my students, like, the only thing that you have, the only thing you have, there's just talent everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Only thing you have that no one else has
is that you. That's right.
It's
you.
It.
And your choices.
Dude,
your
that's
spin.
It.
Your...
When they start talking about, oh my God, it's like 1,000. I'm going to stay out of this audition. It's like 1,000,001 chance. I'm like, yeah, but it's 0 chance if you don't go.
That's right.
So you have to go.
And it's back to that YouTube thing where they think that's the right way. Mm-hmm. No. Mm-hmm. There's your way, and that's it. Right. That's all you can do.
Because you know, like I know directors, we know. You've already seen what you want when you got the script. As you're reading it, you already know what the characters look like. You know.
You're hoping they walk
and you
in
just,
that
door. Oh, that's all you want. All you want is to walk
please
in the door.
Be it.
Yeah.
So,
please
so
be her.
I'm
just
saying
please
they're on your side.
If the one that looks like what you want walks in, you're like, please have some talent. Please.
Yeah.
Can you carry
please
it?
Please just do it.
Can you step touch? Oh, my gosh.
And it's, yeah. I mean,
but I had great teachers with some of the directors I worked with early on, like Bob Falls and Doug Wager, and they would cast the most talented person in the room, whether it made, like,
that's interesting.
Made sense well, or not. And I ended up doing a new musical at the Goodman Theater with two mixed interracial couples. And the playwright said, I didn't write that. And we're like, too bad. They're the most talented. The
good.
Story is not about race. Mm-hmm. The story is about love mm-hmm. and connection.
Right.
And these two are the most. I had Jessica Malasky and Adrian Bailey.
I love Adrian Bailey.
Naked
oh
in a bed.
Yes.
I mean, it was so gorgeous.
What?
You were
I love
like,
it.
Sorry.
And I had Vicki Lewis and, oh gosh, oh God, I forgot his name. Three names. Anyway, from Chicago. Vicki Lewis and he's now a teacher. He's like, he got his PhD or something. Keith Byron Kirk. So I had Vicki Lewis and Keith Byron Kirk, mm-hmm. and I had Adrian Bailey and Jessica Malasky, mm-hmm. and it was the sexiest, beautiful.
Well, getting
living,
back to
you know, it was
which
they
you
were
can,
the most
you know,
talented.
You intimated coming from your family being black in that area was very different, but race in our business exists.
Oh,
it's a thing.
It's a thing.
And I think as artists, for me, I have to choose to be diverse. You know, I have to make that choice because...
Well, there's no color blind casting anymore.
No.
It's color conscious. You have to be very responsible. I feel like that's my...
I do too. I do too. But when I was auditioning for Bob Fosse for Big Deal, and I was already in Lacage at the time, I remember people saying, oh, don't bother going. It's going to be an all-black show. And I was like, well, I don't really care if it's an all purple show. I'm going to go dance for Bob Fosse.
Hello.
Right. And the thing is, exactly. I'm going to dance for Bob Fosse. And then I got to be in an all black show, you know.
With some of the swinging as black folks. I mean, never.
Yeah.
No, it was Clea Vont Derrick,
yes.
Loretta Devine, Alan Weeks. I mean, it was just like, you know, Dream Girls and everything else.
Yeah.
Oy, oy, oy. Really, I had never, and I'd never been in the environment with Southern blacks before.
Mm.
They would, during breaks, burst into song.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, with harmonies and everything.
And everything.
I mean, it was, just, but anyway, I'm just, so I tell my kids, like, you go and you audition. Let them type you out.
Yeah.
Show
That's
up.
Not your job.
Show up.
Show up.
Because, I mean, I got the producers. Because Vinny Liff, you remember
Vinny? Yeah, Vinny.
Yeah. Yes.
Never even auditioned for Vinny. He introduced himself to me at another restaurant, Joanne. And, you know, and I was kind of, you know, my 20-something little attitude. I was thinking, you never see me for anything. How do you have any, you know. But he said, you know, I saw you in Little Rogers Follies. I'm a big fan. And I was like, great, thanks. 10 years later, he calls, and I'm getting out of the business. I'm like, I'm going to become a producer. I'm not into this anymore. I'm not getting cast. Nothing's happening. Katie, I want you to, I just got married, I was in California. I want you to fly yourself to New York and audition to be the cover, the standby for Karen Ziemba and Deb Monk for Steel Pier. And I'd already been nominated for a Tony Award at this point. And I was like, I'll do it. Because I wanted to be in New York.
Yeah.
I wanted back to New York.
Yeah.
And I flew myself. I got the job. We drove the two dogs across country and my husband at the time, we moved back. He called me, and then I did Dame Edna, which was also, right. like, crazy, awesome. And then I get another call from Vinny. Katie, would you consider, Mel Brooks has written a musical about, based on his movie, The Producers, they're doing the first couple of readings. Would you consider playing Ula? And I'm thinking, you know, 19-year-old Lee Meredith dancing around in a bikini. That's, you know, that, and I'm in my 30s, and I said, yes, I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
I'll figure out the bikini part.
Yeah.
And then turns out it's different. So I go into rehearsal in April of 2000, and, you know, how we do these two readings at the end of the first reading. Rocco Landisman comes up to Mel Brooks and says, you know, here's the St. James when you want it. Right. And he, after the second reading, Mel Brooks comes up to me and says, kid, when it goes, you're in. April 2000. Vinnie Lift knew me from 10 years ago. Do your freaking best work.
That's right.
Do your best work. Show up at all those audition rooms.
That's right.
Show up.
Show up at every audition.
Maybe
do
the
your
casting
best.
Director. I mean,
that's it.
The assistant's going to be the producer. Right. Or
exactly.
The
or make the phone call. Don't
or make
be
the phone call.
Bernie tells me that
call. Write the letter. Make the phone.
We were at NYU together.
Well,
you know
see?
What I'm saying? That's one of the reasons why I chose Rent. I had two shows. They were both the same weeks. They were both the same money. And Bernie was casting Rent. It was closer commute. And that's why.
Oh, my gosh.
That was a lucky gamble.
And what was the other show?
I didn't want to go to the Upper East Side.
Can you tell us?
I don't know what it was. It was another. I had done a biblical musical at 92nd Street. Right. I've done two. My first, that's the story. The first show, my first Equity show at 92nd Street Y with... a director I probably won't name, except to say that she was the queen of avant-garde.
Okay.
And
okay.
And that one of that generation of the screamers, you know. And I'm so glad that part's over. That whole screaming in your face and just acting all ignorant stuff. I'm so glad that's over. It needs to be over, and if it's not over, then don't cast me, because no.
Mm.
So she was doing that thing to everybody.
Oh, that screaming in your face.
Yeah, screaming in your face. You understand?
Oh
in your
God.
Face, cussing,
no,
and spitting, and like, cussing, and howling. And
No.
I was like, what the hell is
no.
that?
No.
Yeah, no, what is that? No. So she was doing it to everybody. And that was the first time that I thanked God for Scary Black Chick, because I used to really... No, seriously, I know...
Did
I don't know
come
what
out?
It is.
Did
no,
it come
no,
out?
No, 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 no. Scary Black Chick lives. It's just, you know, this just part of, there's something about me apparently that I've seen people actually just part, like, and I'm like,
you don't have to be black.
I know, right? But whatever that is, right?
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh God, I used to really be sad about it, because, you know, it keeps people off of me.
But did you have to give her the look?
It's your power. It's your superpower.
It is a superpower. It's awesome. And I knew it was keeping her at bay.
Mm. Oh, okay.
But I also knew that if she was to maintain her power, that eventually she'd have to get around to me, because that's just the way that goes, right?
Yeah.
And so my turn finally came. And I was like, am I about to cuss this bitch out? I hope not. So what I did, somehow I channeled that darling mother of mine. I just channeled all that calmness, all that, you know, church lady grace or whatever, which is not me at all. And I told her, I was like, you know what? I'm leaving. I am so not doing
good
this.
Good for you.
We can have conversations any kind of way you want, but not like this. This is not working. Unprofessional, unnecessary, immature. Can't do it. Sorry. And nice working with all of y'all. And, you know,
you left.
I'm out.
That
right?
was it?
I left. Child, please. All the way from the 92nd Street Y to Brooklyn. I'm crying. This is my first equity. This is my equity card.
Yeah,
I ruined
awesome.
My career. You know, just, wow. Oh, my God. I'm just all the way home.
You just know.
Just home. I'm just, oh, my God. I'm just like, and then by the time I get home, you know, I get my job back and pay my rent. And I got my sympathy hug and Dawson. I went home and checked my answering machine. Yes, answering machine. Check my answering machine. And stage manager was like, please be at rehearsal tomorrow. Da, 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 da. I was like, I said, job, what?
Oh, so, that's fantastic.
She made me her assistant. That's because every fool got his own sense, as my husband would say, and that's the truth.
Say that again.
She every made fool her? Got his own sense. That woman made me her assistant.
Because she knew because that she it was going to work knew. For her.
Right. Now, also because she also knew that mess was not going to work with me.
Yeah.
Period. So the best way to manage that would be to put me in a position where she could actually use my strength as opposed to letting it work against her. Because no, see, no.
Wow. Yeah, because you walk out and other people go, can I walk
out? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so there you have it. So
oh, my God. You guys, there's so much talent sitting at this table. I mean, this is like, we have to have reunions or something. It's too wonderful. Thank you, Oprah. I'm going to go take care of the check.
So, thank you. Yeah, metaphorically.
Metaphorically.
I'll drink to that. Ah.
love you. Oh, I got it. I'm superstitious. Love you madly.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.